Good evening, everyone, and welcome back. I'm George Knapp, filling in for Art Bell, broadcasting to you live from Las Vegas. I'm sitting here in a studio all by myself, and I sure hope nothing goes wrong because I'm really winging it here. But I think that you're going to enjoy the next couple of hours. I've got a couple of special guests, guys I've known for a long time. In fact, it's 17 years ago this month, I met these two guys who told me quite a story, changed the course of my professional life, had a lot of effects on my personal life, a story that basically put Area 51 on the map. I mean, 17 years ago, the only people who knew about Area 51 were the folks who had worked there or the folks who lived outside near the base. And now, as we know, it's known all over the world. The cottage industry, movies and books and TV shows and trinkets and Christmas ornaments and ashtrays, you name it. It also created, this story created quite a controversy in ufology, one that continues to this day. You should see the emails that I've been getting, hundreds of them over the past 2 days when we announced that these two guests were going to be joining me tonight. Some of them supportive, some of them very critical, but we're going to tackle both viewpoints tonight. The two guys are Bob Lazar and Gene Huff, and welcome to Coast, guys.
Thanks, George.
Hey, George.
Bob Lazar, of course, is president of United Nuclear, his own scientific research and development company looking into cutting-edge technologies. He sells a lot of retail scientific equipment and supplies through this company on the Internet. Gene Huff is his buddy, his confidant. He's known Lazar since the mid-1980s. He knew him before, during, and after he was in this flying disc reverse engineering program at S4 near Area 51. Gene also wrote the videotape, the Lazar tape, and excerpts from the government Bible. He's written a screenplay about he and Bob's adventures in Dreamland Chronicles. And these two guys have known this story from the beginning. They've not only known it, they've lived it. Bob, I'm going to start with not the Area 51 stuff, but some other dramatic developments that have happened in your life in just the last couple of weeks. Let's just jump into it without a lot of background explanation. What's happened?
Well, boy, that's a long story.
Give me the headline.
I'll give it to you in kind of a nutshell. And unfortunately, there's some of it I can't talk about, and that's for legal reasons, because now this is turning into a... well, anyway. Oh, a few years ago, we were raided here by a SWAT team, along with a few other government agencies. That we really haven't identified. And basically, they handcuffed my wife and I, went through everything in the house, confiscated our computers, and even took the trash cans that we typically shred catalogs and things of that sort and use for packing material when we ship our supplies out. They confiscated all of that material that was in the trash cans, packaged it, and sent it to Washington.
So what? Why were they doing this? What were they looking for?
Well, that's the big question. They never made it clear exactly what they were looking for. They were concerned with some of the materials we sold in our company. Nothing's illegal or has any problems associated with it, as far as we knew. They confiscated all of the hydrogen system information that we had been working on. They confiscated things that were and photographed things that had nothing to do with the scientific supply business, and they also never told us what they were looking for. So we were kind of at a loss as to what was going on.
George, and now it's sort of culminated, hasn't it? Go ahead, Gene.
George, there is a humorous part to this story, and that is Bob's wife, Joy, met him. They started dating and got together after Bob's UFO days. So, and he doesn't really talk about things that happened in his past to a great degree. So Joy, you know, this was her first introduction to the life of Bob Lazar. She has some ninja guys pointing automatic weapons at her nose when she's in bed on a random Saturday morning. Now, this might happen all the time in Bob Lazar's life, but she had never been exposed to this, so it was quite a shock for her.
So there they are. They're investigating the things that you're selling over the internet and through the mails on your company, United Nuclear. They're there, and now, more recently, the investigation has culminated in a very dramatic fashion, has it not?
Oh, yeah, they want to press criminal charges. Now, I think they basically had nothing to really charge us with. So they came down to a criminal charge of shipping materials illegally. But I sincerely, well, I don't know. I really doubt some of the claims they've made as to why they decided to raid the place with such tremendous force. I mean, bringing the SWAT team out and guys in camo and spending $75,000 on an operation where they overflew with airplanes photographing the house, looking for best points of entry, and as opposed to picking up the telephone and calling or sending somebody over saying, well, we'd like to check this and this, if that's okay with you. And, you know, it had nothing to do or...
You don't think it had anything to do with the business?
No, it didn't. And unfortunately, because this is now just going to court, I was kind of hoping I could talk more about it. But my attorney told me not to say anything too in-depth pertaining to this.
Have you actually been charged?
I really, really suspect this has nothing whatsoever to do with the sale of, you know, general scientific supplies.
George, I can talk.
Okay.
Bob can't.
Has he been charged?
It could be payback time for being Bob Lazar and spilling the secrets. You never know.
Possible, you know, and Eric could have something to do with the hydrogen fuel systems. I'm really surprised at their actions and what they're telling us the problem is. It just doesn't match up. I mean, it's ridiculous. Even the search warrant that was presented. Now, you know, for somebody to get a search warrant, they have to present an affidavit to a judge. And all search warrants have the affidavit attached to them. Well, we should be able to access, anybody should, a search warrant, given the search warrant number and going to a courthouse and finding out what the problem is. See the affidavit that's attached to it. Well, when we try and do that, they tell us our search warrant is sealed and the affidavit isn't accessible. So this is just typical of what's been going on virtually my entire life.
Well, at least ever since you went on the air on KLAS and spilled the beans about S4. We're gonna take a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Gene Huff and Bob Lazar, get into some specifics about exactly what materials you sold over through your business that they were most interested in. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp, sitting in for Art Bell. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm your guest host, George Knapp, broadcasting live here in Las Vegas, sitting in for Art Bell. My guests this evening, Bob Lazar and Gene Huff. We'll be talking a little bit later about Area 51, S4, flying saucers, things of that sort. But first, we're looking at the latest development in the long and complicated Lazar saga. Bob has just been telling us about government raids at his property in New Mexico, where he runs a home-based business. Bob, am I to understand that you have actually been charged? And if so, what are the charges?
Well, they're attempting to bring charges against us. As of this moment, I don't know what the exact status is. But what the criminal charges are, I don't know myself.
Do you know what the chemicals are that they seem to have focused on, or the products that they are focusing on that you sold? I understood that maybe there had been some sort of a sting operation involved in this.
No, I don't believe there's anything along the lines of a sting operation. The chemicals are just general laboratory chemicals, oxidizers and anything else you'd find in a laboratory. In addition, we sell model rocketry supplies and glassware and you know, just about anything you'd run into. Nothing that's extraordinarily dangerous.
So you're not selling bomb-making material?
No. I mean, we do have chemicals and things like that where you can make fireworks, but we're not talking about high explosives or terrorist material or poisons or anything like that. That's not the case.
You know, the rumors have been, and you hear them as well, Gene, that Bob Lazar has sold out to the government. He was a disinformation agent all these years, spreading these lies about S-4 and flying saucers, and now he's living off his fat government contracts because he sold out. This development sort of suggests you're not in such good standing with your pals in the government, right?
I don't quite remember retiring off a big government salary. No, I wouldn't say they're pals at all.
You know, this is not the first time that these kinds of things happen, and I know because I lived through a lot of it. Gene, I wonder if you could help me fill in the gaps. You know, a lot of people have a lot of problems with Bob's story. We all know why. I've been reading these emails from physicists and others who say, there's no 115. It doesn't exist. Bob's physics and propulsion system don't make sense. But I think a lot of these folks, even if that is true, and we'll grant that for the moment, a lot of folks who are critics of the Lazar story don't know the things that really went down in his life, in your life, back in the day. Things much very similar to what's happening to him now. Gene, you lived through it. Can you tell us a little bit about the kinds of things that happened? You know, whether people believe Bob was ever out there or not, or saw flying saucers, the kinds of things that happened after he went on the air. After he went on the air way back in 1989, people, you know, the phones and people following him and things of that nature.
Right. I was, back then I was working with National Appraisal Service on Eastern Avenue here in Las Vegas, and you know, people were following Bob all the time. Government agents were following him, and it would be funny. I'd have a gun there at my office, and Bob would come screeching up in a car, run into my office, say, "Give me a gun." I'd hand him a gun. He'd run outside, get back in his car, and go screaming down the street. And I wouldn't see him for a couple of days. And these were just, you know, strange ongoing circumstances, constant clicks and other voices on his phone, and just things you see in the movies. You know, when you're living through them, I mean, all of us hear strange clicks on our phones. And then, you know, when he got debriefed out at, he was at Indian Springs Air Force Base right before he got kicked out of the program. They actually had transcripts of everything he had said on his phone and his wife had said on the telephone. And he then knew that the clicks weren't just clicks, that they actually had been listening and we weren't imagining things. George, you know, what was your previous guest name, Eric Davis?
Right.
Did he say when he, Bob, did you listen to the show before we came on here?
No, as you can tell, I just woke up, which is why I sound like
I... There was a physicist on here named Eric Davis that said he asked your female supervisor, not that you ever had a female supervisor, at least that I was aware of, or you told me about, if you had worked out there and she pulled up your record on a computer and you worked as some physics technician out at Area 51, but you weren't able to go into the areas that required security clearance. You know, George, as you well know,
Wait. What is this now?
George, you and the rest of some of the greatest researchers in the United States and other countries and everyone in the world tried to access Bob Lazar's background, and now you've got a guy who says he just asked Bob's supervisor and she pulled his record up on the computer. You know, so don't
that's
you
true. And, yeah, actually, we were going to get into this a little bit later, but maybe this is the time to it. And I have a stack of emails here written by a variety of folks. There's a former Air Force officer, Captain Robert Collins, who's written extensively in this area, who cites a number of sources who confirm that Bob was, in fact, out at Area 51, but that he only visited the place 22 times, worked in a very low level technical position, and never had access to the saucers. They believe that you were at the base, Bob. They believe that the saucers were out there. They just don't believe that you ever worked on them.
They also said he was a stealth fighter mechanic.
Stealth fighter mechanic, there's something interesting.
Yeah, I think the statement the sources have told these folks, and it's been widely reported on the Internet, that, Bob, that you were stationed at Tonopah for a time being, that you worked on the avionics of the stealth program. I'm giving you a chance now to respond to it directly.
Oh, come on. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous.
George, two things from comments on when Eric Davis and the subsequent callers about the time machine. First of all, if the guy with the time machine that could see forward and backward in time could get us some info before we put our bets down on Monday night's final basketball game for the NCAA, that would be helpful. And secondly, you know, I think Bob not elaborating in the Lazar tape and other interviews on element 115 has caused some problems when a lab synthesizes some 115. And if Bob would explain how they do that, I mean, these particles, they're these atoms go flying through these sensors, and they'll exist for a fraction of a second. No one has a quantity of it that they can hold in their hand. But the 115 that Bob dealt with was kept under neutron bombardment at rest. And Bob, I mean, it could have been an isotope or what. I don't know. I'm not a physicist of 115, but there were a lot of extenuating circumstances about this 115. It was just, wasn't just a clump of 115. It had to, they had to take great care to make it exist, right?
Yeah, I mean, now I don't know how we got to talking about UFOs so quickly. We were just discussing the raid and everything here, and I can't believe you guys snuck that in.
I was trying to help out the listeners. They don't want to talk about it.
We're gonna get back on track here in a minute. If you want to address this.
When they synthesize elements, and there's a variety of ways, and you know, a popular new way is nuclei fusion, where you just accelerate particles or subatomic particles at each other, and cyclotrons or linear accelerators, and you basically smash these things together, or by other means, transmute elements, and you can make or attempt to make elements not yet discovered that will appear on the periodic chart. One of them is element 115, and when they did synthesize a couple atoms of this recently, people think when they do these procedures, they wind up with a measurable amount, like a, you know, a gram or so of the material. All they succeed in doing is really creating a few atoms of it that fly through detectors, and through various techniques and timing, they can tell what those particles are, and that's about it. They can never measure or analyze these elements in depth when they make it that way. And those higher level elements, simply because you only get such small amounts.
Well, we're going to go into 115 in depth a little bit later, but before we leave this, now this raid that's happened on your home, I mean, Gene was filling in some of the gaps about other things that happened to you way back when. I remember being over to your house, and you were looking out the window and holding an Uzi because you're worried about somebody coming in. There were break-ins, weren't there? Not only to your house, but your car?
Yeah, there really were. And like I said, it was really a traumatic time, and I had mentioned this back then when I did my original interviews, that you know, a lot of people look upon this as something that would be really cool to happen, or, you know, aren't you excited to have been part of this? And, you know, this is nothing that I profited over. This is nothing that I ever would do again, really. And, yeah, in some aspects, and I've mentioned this before, that I do feel privileged to have been part of the program, but, you know, it certainly wasn't worth it. And for people making claims like I'm now friends with the government and they support me and I'm just some rich guy living out in the forest in New Mexico, now those claims are ridiculous. I never do interviews or lectures. I mean, I try and divorce myself from this stuff completely, and a lot of people don't understand that. But, you know, it's almost like if you were a victim of a crime, of a rape or something like that, it's not something that you go and talk about the rest of your life. You know, this is something that I am not interested in. I was only interested in the technology of the program, which is why I was attracted to the job. And, you know, I'm not a UFO enthusiast. I don't do lectures, and it was only the technology that got me into this. And, you know, that's about it. This is nothing that's part of my life. It's nothing that's paying me any money. And it's something that I really hate even talking about.
We're going to take a short break and then force you to talk about it some more, even though you hate it. We're talking with Bob Lazar and Gene Huff. I'm George Knapp, filling in for Art Bell. We're taking a short break and be right back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Knapp in for Art Bell. I believe that's a song by the Highwaymen there. A good choice, somehow appropriate, because my guests tonight are sort of outlaws from the world of ufology, Bob Lazar and Gene Huff. You're still there, right, guys?
We're here.
Yeah, I have to apologize for being so sleepy. I mean, I've got coffee brewing now, but I took a sleeping pill to get an early nap, and I'm one of those guys, if I take an aspirin, it hits me like a sledgehammer. So,
oh, it sounds
bear
great.
With me. I will wake up and be lucid in a short time.
George, right. I'd like to make a comment. I mean, all kidding aside, on Bob's personal life, he went through rough times after he got kicked out of the program at S4. Personally, financially, he had a couple of bad relationships. He was destroyed financially. A lot of external circumstances. Economy changed. Things changed. I think it's curious that now he and his wife have a nice little business going, and for the first time in probably a decade, he's back on his feet financially, and now is when the federal government chooses to raid and prosecute him on bogus charges. It's almost like while he was down, they kept hands off, but they, you know, maybe I'm being paranoid, but I don't know why they waited to the first time he's achieved a little success once again financially, and they choose now to prosecute him.
Well, I was not trying to beat a dead horse in talking about some of the things that happened in his life long ago, break-ins in the house and his car and death threats and the phones tapped and people following him, only to emphasize that even though a lot of people don't buy the story and they have their own reasons for not buying it, something really was going on back then and something is still going on now. There is another possibility that maybe it's not related to any of the revelations you made back in 1989. You mentioned that you're also working on a hydrogen system for automobiles. Tell me about the system. Tell me how far along it is. And maybe, Gene, you can speculate on whether that would be a reason for them to come after them.
Okay.
Well, anything's really possible. The hydrogen system I actually started working on as far back as the 70s, something that I tinkered around with during the gas crisis, and just was something I played around with on and off, and there really is no big trick to running a car on hydrogen. I mean, you can basically run your own car on hydrogen with just a few minor changes. The trick with hydrogen is storing it, and you can either store it as a gas in a big giant metal cylinder in your car somewhere under a lot of pressure so you can hold as much as you can and burn it that way. You can super cool liquid hydrogen, or hydrogen, so it's liquid hydrogen, and therefore you have an increased density, and the tank that holds it needs to be smaller. The problem is with both of these things, among other problems, is it's pretty explosive in that fashion. If you get in a car accident, you have a big tank of compressed hydrogen, it releases, ignites, possibly explodes. Liquid hydrogen is even worse because it's on top of it. It's absolutely freezing cold. This stuff is hundreds of degrees below zero, and in addition to immediately evaporating and possibly igniting and causing burns and all that kind of stuff. There is a third way to store hydrogen, and that's in a metal hydride. And some materials have the ability to absorb hydrogen like a sponge absorbs water. And once it's absorbed and stored in that material, it's essentially non-flammable. Yeah, it will smolder somewhat, but it does not present the hazard of these either of these other methods of storage. And that's something that I was interested in and we started working on.
And I've been to your house there in New Mexico. I've seen this 30-foot long particle accelerator that I guess has a role in the system that you developed. I know that you have this hydrogen system in your own two vehicles and that it's been a heck of a long time since you've had to buy gasoline. Is that right?
Yeah, the first car we converted was a Chevrolet Corvette and then a Mitsubishi Endeavor. And now we're looking at converting a GMC. But our vehicles have been running on for hydrogen for quite a while, and we manufacture the fuel ourselves. And it's something that we'd really like to do, do as many vehicles as possible. And the business we're talking about is United Nuclear, and what we want to do is manufacture kits so you can easily convert your existing car.
So how close are you to a system that could be mass-produced and available for consumers? Because I think it's relevant to where we're heading with this conversation.
Right. Well, like I said, the system, I mean, there are a couple little quirks here and there, but nothing serious. I mean, you can certainly put a conversion kit on your car. Like I said, our cars have been running for years on hydrogen. The problem is the material, the hydride itself. And although there are other hydrides available, the particular hydride blend we came up with can be charged and discharged a lot more often and also holds a lot more hydrogen than the commonly available hydrides. The particle accelerator I built is used in the manufacture of that. The problem is that one of the materials in our hydride is classified as a weapon material.
Well, that might be some reason somebody might be interested in you then.
Well, yeah, it might be. It's a thermonuclear weapon material. It's nothing that, you know, a terrorist can get a hold of. It in itself is not, you know, it cannot be used as an explosive or anything along those lines. So, yeah, is that a possibility that they cause such a fuss about it? I guess it's possible, but...
Well, I'm thinking more...
Why didn't they say so?
Well, Bob, I'm thinking more along another line, and that is this: if your cars are already running on this hydrogen system and the potential exists for mass production and mass consumption of this, that there might be other people who might be interested in causing you trouble. I think, Gene, you have an idea about where I'm heading with that one.
George, you know, you hear all these paranoid stories about, well, yeah, we could get cheap, easy, even free fuel, but the agencies in the federal government are preventing it because then they won't be able to sell oil. But, Bob, I think you should add to this story when about the little visit from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and how you had to have one of them on site, and they even wanted to charge you. How much was it to fire up your own particle accelerator to replenish this hydrogen? The federal government intervened right there in his own on his own property in his own particle accelerator, right?
Well, yeah, technically I'm not allowed to operate my particle accelerator. And technically, believe it or not, it's not the NRC. Do you know who regulates lasers and particle accelerators?
I don't.
The FDA, Food and Drug Administration. Believe it or not, this is how our government is set up. Anyway, I'm not allowed to operate my own accelerator that I built, and nor can you. You're not allowed to build any machine that can produce radiation. You must have a license to manufacture, operate, or virtually conceive a radiation-producing machine. So I can't even run the thing legally. And it doesn't replenish the hydrogen. It's just used in the manufacture of the storage material. So,
but don't you have to pay for them to come?
Oh, well, then there's, then there's the possibility of a license that's $5,000 a month. I mean, this, the regulations they impose on this are absolutely ridiculous.
And you would say imposed to prevent people from inventing their own hydrogen systems or
no,
using
I
their
mean,
own
these,
accelerators?
These were in place, but and who knows what reason they created these laws for. I imagine to protect the public, so I guess for some reason if you want to build an X-ray machine, you're not allowed to, and then you can't hurt yourself beaming yourself with X-rays. It's the only radiation-producing machine I think would be easy for somebody to make. But in any case, it was obvious what this machine is being used for. It's not being used in the production of weapon materials or anything like that. And this is not the only faction of the government that's given us a hassle. We had just about everybody from every department here on one particular day. Everything from the building and inspection to the fire department. I mean, it as if somebody suddenly put us in the crosshairs and said, just fire.
I'm gonna take a short break again. When I come back, I'll ask you to list all the different departments that were out there raiding your house. Those building guys, they're pretty tough. And we'll be right back with Bob Lazar and Gene Huff. I'm George Knapp, filling in for Art Bell on Coast to Coast. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Knapp, in for Art Bell. We are joined this evening by Bob Lazar and Gene Huff. And we're talking about some very recent developments in Bob's life that sort of fit the longer pattern. Bob, back to your hydrogen fuel system for cars. You were mentioning that your home in New Mexico was raided by a whole laundry list of agencies. ATF, were they there?
If they were, they didn't identify themselves. Now, virtually nobody identified themselves except the local people. And by the local people, I mean the people from the fire department or the building and zoning and the local sheriff and
FBI?
Yeah, I believe the FBI was there. There was another government agency, and they never identified themselves, so I don't know who they were. But, you know, the SWAT team, they didn't need to identify themselves. That was pretty obvious.
You said Black Ninja outfits? I mean, seriously?
No. what they did wear that was really interesting, and it was the first time I ever saw it, was the camo. And this isn't the camo you wear just as a normal soldier would. This is kind of that drop cloth with real twigs and branches sticking out of it. It's hilarious, but it wasn't hilarious that day. These guys came up from the bottom of the property, and then another force came in from the top, apparently in case we tried to get away from whatever it is was going on. And, then they had just your range of typical SWAT guys that called us out on the megaphone, and, you know, we came to the door, and they handcuffed us. But obviously this was a big old operation. Interesting thing that happened is one of the agents left his legal pad, which was wonderful and had a wealth of information on it. And that's where we learned where they had previously photographed our property from the air looking for possible ways to escape and any other buildings and things like that we had around. So it was
when I mentioned earlier that I was just kidding about a sting operation, but do you believe that they have that agents posing as customers have purchased things from you as a way to sort of build a case against you?
Well, I know that's happened to a fact, or without a doubt. And look, there are prosaic explanations for all of this stuff. You know, it's possible that, look, being a scientific supply outlet, you know, maybe they thought we were a drug manufacturer or something like that. They're, you know, doing some other illegal activity because of all the weird equipment, chemicals, radioactive materials we order and resell. You know, maybe these guys just thought, you know, boy, something else has got to be going on there, and they just thought this was a gamble that might pay off, and it just didn't. It might have nothing to do with, you know, my past or the hydrogen system, but it's just incredibly suspicious to me.
George, well, I mean, yeah, go ahead, Gene.
If I interject here, as usual, Bob's being a little modest. I mean, this hydrogen fuel system isn't something he tinkered with a little bit since the late 70s. I mean, it's fully functional. He drives his cars on it, and if Bob... if it was legal to provide this, I mean, Bob could, you know, put literally a hydrogen fuel system on just about any car, and they could get the hydrogen via electrolysis with the solar panel on their garage roof. But Bob, these hydrides that you store the hydrogen in that you say could be used to make a thermonuclear device, I thought you told me those were kept in a complete vacuum, and if just some normal guy like George or I opened it, they would be destroyed once the vacuum was broken. You'd have to be a highly trained, a physicist, something along that lines, to actually make a bomb out of those hydrides, wouldn't you? I mean, the guy walking down the street couldn't do that.
I mean, all the hydrides do is store hydrogen. I mean, in a weapon, that's the material that stores the hydrogen, like the hydrogen in a hydrogen bomb.
Right.
And to get it to go off, you need an atomic bomb already. So unless you already have an atomic bomb, this material is useless to you as a weapon.
Here's the theory that I was pursuing to see what you guys think about it. But I mean, if this hydrogen system works and revolutionizes the transportation industry, it would obviously have bad effects on the oil industry. Given our political environment and the amount of influence that this oil industry has, couldn't you be viewed as a potential threat to very large industries. I mean, we've all heard the stories. Certainly the listeners of Art Bell have heard the stories about promising energy technologies that are quashed because they represent a threat to the profits of major international corporations. Has that crossed your mind?
Yeah, I mean, you always hear people talk about stuff like that, and I generally don't believe it. I don't think that can be the case. And, you know, using hydrogen is not new at all. You know, we've been able to store more in a smaller space than previously. And the system is fairly easy to install on a car. In fact, what we want to do is sell kits so you can install it yourself or have a mechanic to install it. And you can't tell me that major auto manufacturers and other people haven't stumbled on this. I mean, unless we just happen to hit on the perfect combination and we really can store more hydrogen than ever before, and, you know, then it is something pretty significant. But the bottom line is the system does work. Is it possible we're stepping on somebody's toes? Yeah, I guess it's possible. I'm not sure if that's the case. But, you know, we do have something we'd like to market. But instead of getting help through the government, I mean, in every way, shape, and form, everybody has stood in our way. Now, I don't know if I'm just paranoid, but it's just suspicious that all this stuff has suddenly happened right at the same time. You know, we basically announced that we have this and we want to bring it to market.
Gene, I know your politics a bit. Would you like to elaborate on that
just
possibility?
Because the president is the son of a rich and famous oil family, George, I think we're being paranoid. After all, I mean, no one would use the federal government, manipulate the federal government just for the sake of oil, do you think?
Well, I mean, do you think that that's what's happening?
I don't know. I mean, it would have to be a pretty comprehensive program. I would hate to think that with all of the all of the situations prevailing in the world, the war in Iraq, the fact that, you know, everyone hates them, you know, the plethora of global warming, you name it, the problems we got, that they're worrying about Bob Lazar, you know, replenishing some hydrides with the hydrogen down at his ranch down in New Mexico would be, you know, high on the minds of the federal government. You know, I it's difficult to be that paranoid, but I think it's true. I mean, we know that cars could be run on, well, some cars are running on hydrogen, but everyone could be driving in a car today that did not run on gasoline if it weren't for the fact that the oil companies, and it has to be with the help of the car manufacturers, are trying to use the oil as long as they've got it. Let's face it, if you look at history in big chunks of time, you know, not in billions of years like the universe or the earth, but 5,000 years, I mean, oil was really only valuable for the past 100 years and the next 100 years. I mean, the Arabs weren't rich people historically. It's just 100 years ago when we found we needed all of this oil, they happened to be over an ocean of it. So I think they want to, you know, pump it out and sell it while they can. 100 years from now, 200 years from now, no one will be driving gas-powered cars unless they're classic cars. And so, yeah, I do feel there is an agreement, certainly between the Saudi royal family, the Bush royal family, everyone in the United States, to get while the getting's good, sell the oil while people are complacent enough and comfortable enough, or at least trusting enough to think that we won't destroy the earth by burning fossil fuels, and so they can sell it while they make their money while they can.
Bringing it back to your business, Bob, United Nuclear, who are your customers? I mean, are you selling to terrorists? You know, I've been on your website. You've got this one animated figure of a guy, and the caption under it is, "Got Uranium." You're selling uranium pellets that you found on public lands, and I mean, it's post-2001. Don't you think that you're going to attract government attention? I'll tell you what, I think we're going to have to take a break here, so you'll have to answer that question when we come back.
Okay.
We're talking with Bob Lazar and Gene Huff. I'm George Knapp, in for Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM.